pretty busy week. We had all this past Saturday, we had our garden party, and I just want to take this opportunity to thank everybody who participated, all the helpers, including Ugana, who helped serve food, and we had many vendors, and we did very well. And as usual, it did not rain. And so we're always grateful for that because the forecast was for rain, but it did not rain until we were done. And then it started to rain a little bit. Anyway, I just want to acknowledge that we are located on Treaty 1 territory, the traditional land and waters of the Innu, Cree, and Anishinaabe homeland. We also acknowledge the Shoal Lake Number 40 First Nation and its territory for our life, giving water. And also we have to acknowledge that it's also the home of the Dakota and Dene people, as well as the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis homeland. I sort of missed that part out. Anyway, and we also acknowledge the Shoal Lake Number 40 First Nation and its territory for our life, giving water. So this morning, we have a guest, and I'll be introducing her shortly. We will be having the guest for the most of the part of this morning, and as time permits, I will be providing some environmental information and ending with a recipe, as we usually do. And so on that note, I would like to introduce our guest, and I'm wondering if she's here.
Oh, yes, hello, good morning.
Good morning. Okay, thanks. Thanks, Pat, so you're there. I couldn't see your name on the screen. Anyway, our guest today is Pat Lusenko, and she is one of the co-chairs of what is the name of the organization? One Hours Winnipeg. And she also has a partner that is involved with this organization, Dave Green, but he's not going to be joining us this morning. So Ours Winnipeg is an organization which is an advocacy group that works for the protection of green spaces so necessary to our health and that of the planet. It also requires the support and accountability from our elected government representatives. The City of Winnipeg is updating zoning bylaws, and Ours Winnipeg is asking the public to take the time to complete the city's short, mostly check-in box survey, which is open until June the 5th. We are encouraged to participate in the survey as our voice is essential. I would like to point out that Ours Winnipeg originated out of concerns for loss of green spaces and natural habitat. In December 2011, Ours Winnipeg responded to a plan by the City of Winnipeg to put up the city-owned golf courses for sale or lease for commercial or residential development. A public campaign was launched, which resulted in the proposal being withdrawn. So that was at the time when I first became familiar with Ours Winnipeg. So anyway, he's welcome to Wooden Spoons, Pam.
Oh, thank you very much. Good morning.
Yes.
And you are right about the survey that's coming up, and that's important, and I'll explain that. It is interesting and disconcerting that a survey of this importance isn't given much attention for the public, but you're right. It is concerning. Part of the reason is that the zoning bylaws are not something most people think about day to day. They are rules for how a city grows. But unless you bump up against them, like you're trying to build something or plant something or remove something on your property, they stay in the background. Cities, and how these, I'll explain how the bylaws kind of fit in with this. The cities work within a kind of a hierarchy of their planning documents. So at the very top is a big vision document. And the long-term plans under that explain how those plans are carried out. And then at the bottom of the zoning bylaws are the actual rules. They're based on the plans and the policy. So that's how we got here. And I'll just give some examples what it is. How far must your house be from the waterway? What you're allowed to build on your property? How tall can the building be? What kind of vegetation can you have? And whether the land is zoned for homes or for industry or for parks. So zoning affects everybody, whether we realize it or not. And what makes this moment especially important is that Winnipeg is rewriting its zoning bylaws for the first time in 20 years. And it's not just a small update. It's a rewrite of the entire system. Huge bylaws. There's actually about 600 pages. And one is for the downtown area, and one is for the rest of the city. And they are being combined into a single document. Another reason this is happening now is that the Federal Housing Accelerative Fund is in progress with the city. And cities across Canada, you may have recalled in the news, receive funding to help build housing more quickly. And part of that agreement requires that the city revise their zoning bylaws to allow more density and to speed up approval for those houses. Winnipeg is using as funding for it to pay for these bylaws, the bylaw rewrite, which is a normal thing that's happening across the country. The whole process will take about a year and a half, and the decisions will be made now and will shape how the city grows for decades. That's why public input is so important, even though the survey itself, it maybe hasn't been so widely promoted because it's hard for people to kind of understand this topic.
Okay. Just getting back a little bit, were you involved with the Parker Wetlands at all?
Yes, I was.
Okay, because seem to have recalled that. And that goes back quite a while, and that was under when Sam Cates and Shegel, his right-hand man, were running, were in City Hall. And mm-hmm. And so Gem Equities wanted to take over the last remaining standing trees and last remaining area that was a natural habitat, was a place for birds to come when they were migrating. Mm-hmm. It had an ecosystem of water, and you would be familiar with that. And Gem Equities wanted to build to create a housing complex there, I think I'm correct in saying that a corrupt government allows these things to happen, and I consider the government under that particular Sam Cates and Shegel was corrupt, and there has been a lawsuit. Actually, against Shegel, apparently he has to come up with a huge fine. Anyway, it's a long story, but anyway, I recall that was a very, very poignant time. Anyway, ours Winnipeg has concerns about the current zoning bylaw. And what areas mm-hmm. do you feel are not properly considered? And if so, what is the underlying motivation for ignoring those areas? Would you tell us about the current city bylaws and what is missing in them?
Okay. I just got a comment on the Parkerlands because you mentioned it. And that's a really good example of how important zoning bylaws are and how we don't, because the land that was Parkerlands was a beautiful space, and people used it as a park, and they thought of it as a park. They thought it was a park. And then it turned out that it was, I think, zoned agricultural and industrial, and so it didn't have the protection that parkland has, because it's hard to take away parkland because it has a little higher protection. And so that zoning, actually, that underlying zoning was one thing that enabled that process to happen. So that's a little bylaw story. As you asked, our main concerns with the current zoning bylaw is it was written with a focus on buildings, of course, like about density, about maximum lot coverage, very small setbacks, but it didn't have a green lens. It doesn't ask about parks, near your home, access to waterways or natural features that people value in the neighborhoods. And even the city's own questionnaire doesn't raise those issues. In fact, I noticed like even the picture that in the public engagement that they use is like tall buildings with three little green trees in the bottom. It's not about greenery, this plan, and it's even in their picture. So right now, the zoning bylaw does not adequately protect green space or natural areas or river corridors or trees. It allows development too close to the waterways. It doesn't protect natural areas on private land. And it doesn't reflect the city's own environmental policy guidance. It still risks, and this plan, one of the things it still relies on is the water.
I'm not sure if your voice is coming through, Pam. Is there a problem with the...
I can hear.
You can't. Maybe it's my headphone.
Okay. Yeah,
anyway,
I'm not hearing you as well either. I'm on my phone.
Okay.
Can you hear anything?
Okay, well, that's fine. I think maybe, I'm not sure if the headphone, I just find it kind of tricky to hear with this headphone. But anyway, this never happened before. So, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, but do you want to just continue, Pam?
Okay. So I'll carry on then. Right now, the zoning bylaw, doesn't adequately protect the green space or natural areas. It relies on policy like the waterways regulation. Actually, that's a plan that permits development that's harmful to the river ecology. So we still have some things in there that are not helpful. A big part of the problem is timing with this whole plan and the order it's happening. Right now, the green space and the natural corridor plan, which sit at the top of the planning hierarchy, I talked about the highest documents at the top, hasn't been approved by council yet. And it likely won't be approved till next spring. So meanwhile, the zoning bylaw, which sits at the bottom of the hierarchy, is being rewritten first. So the rules are being updated before the ecological direction is there. And even though the plan's mostly written, it's still not council approved. So it doesn't have that extra weight. It could even be new councillors that are looking at this in the spring. So, and the other one is the climate action plan we have right now. It doesn't recognize the essential role of trees. So that is not helping the input into this the bylaws. And so these natural assets cool neighborhoods, they manage stormwater, they protect biodiversity, but that is not reflected in the... that won't be policy in the bylaw rules either, which is something we would have been able to count on.
So they're not covering some of the issues that should be covered. They're not concerned about.
They're aware of them, but they don't have the power yet of being actually approved policy, and especially the climate action plan. That piece is not there. Yeah.
And why do you think that is? I mean, if they have bylaws and they should have
the plan.
Should have them more complete than that.
Yeah. These plans that would support green space or greenery for the bylaws, the city is working on the green space plan right now. But it's just taking a long time. It's been in progress for 4 years now, and now it's been delayed to the spring. The city is working on it, but it's just not here. And the climate action plan, after all these years of having the plan, there is actually a public engagement right now to talk about this very issue, so it hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And you also pointed out that the consultant team is largely a consultant team having to do with, I guess, with the bylaws, is drawn from the development industry. And why is this a concern, and why should this be corrected?
I guess it's a common practice. Like the city does tender out to hire consultants, so they have a proper process. And I guess the experts are the development industry. But at the same time, there's no denying they do stand to benefit from these bylaws and how they are changed. Because if they're changed, they don't have a direct input in it, but they're definitely part of the process. and have some impact in it. And so a local developer would definitely have something to benefit from if this process improved bylaws that favor their, well, that favor their work, sort of like, yeah.
Yeah, because if you have, yeah, we need more input from people from the community, wouldn't we? To because this is our green spaces are very important, and the community should be consulted.
Yeah. Because like the developers, they're key in building, making the homes denser, and they enabling to accommodate more people. And the rules that limit to keep the trees and everything, it does cost them more money. Having denser properties and having denser development and less parkland actually helps the developers, because that's more land that's available to develop on. So that's kind of where the conflict is.
Yeah, that makes sense. You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM. This is Wooden Spoons, and with our co-host, John Dick. John, do you have any comments to make or questions?
I guess this is about Climate Action Manitoba. Is that organization, what do you do in terms of, like, compost? Do you collect compost and do that as well?
I don't think Climate Action, I'm not sure. Like, I mean, that's definitely something that helps the environment. The city has been trying for years. Like, I remember them talking about it in 2010, and they're still working on a compost plan, which is really disappointing. I think it's in the city's hands, really, that one. They should be have that up and running by now.
Our neighbors.
I guess groups like Climate Action, I think they have programs they do on their own, maybe, but we don't have a citywide program.
For composting?
No, for composting, no.
That's interesting. I do. We only have, we have a compost bin. So when we rake our leaves and everything, we put it in the compost bin and eventually it decomposes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's right. Yes, we do have that program. I guess I'm thinking of household composting.
And our neighbor, he also collects compost because he lives in Gimli, apparently. Like his wife's family live in Gimli. And so he brings he has these bins that he collects. I don't know who he collects compost from, but he brings it to Gimli and he uses it on that land that they have, where they have chickens and so on.
I guess there are individual, like, there's individual efforts, and I think
there are people that are concerned. Talking
about, they do pick stuff up. I think there's a fee, so that can happen. But the city itself has been working on a citywide program for a long time for the household waste.
Yeah, they're not involved with that, right? Anyway, you also were, you had concerns you were concerned about river ecology and in this whole situation. Would you expand on the concept and how the riverbank should be treated?
Sure. Like our rivers are special. Winnipeg sits in the middle of a very special natural ecosystem, and we call ourselves a river city. There's four major rivers and four creeks. There's actually five sub-watersheds that converge here. These waterways shape our identity, our history, and the beauty of our city. What people may not realize is that every one of these waterways is classified as ecologically significant under the city's own ecologically significant natural land strategy. We call it EFNL for short. Our river corridors are the most biodiverse lands we have. They support birds, fish, beavers, muskrats, river otters, and all kinds of living creatures. And they actually contain the area with most habitats. They have four distinct habitat zones between the water's edge and the upper floodplain, the flat area at the top. Many species depend on a combination of these habitats. So, for example, if we mow to the top of the bank, we're actually missing one of the four habitats, right, at the top of the riverbank. So there are, it's a whole system that works together. Healthy riverbanks need natural vegetation that can withstand flooding, erosion, and seasonal changes. It's adapted over millennia to those conditions. The benefits exceed far beyond the banks themselves. The rivers cool neighborhoods, they absorb stormwater, they reduce flooding, and they support wildlife movement. And the problem with this is, our problem is, that our zoning bylaws still treat rivers and creeks like ordinary streets when they're doing the bylaws. So instead of the ecological assets that they are. And we saw this earlier in the proposal to increase waterway setbacks for development from the river was 2 feet from the back of the building. And 2 feet from the river. And so we had asked for it to go to 25 feet, and the city did increase it. But that's nowhere near what is needed to protect a riparian area or prevent erosion. So for comparison, the city requires a 93-foot setback from a retention pond. So the building has to be, this is a new bylaw that's come in to change that it will be 93-foot setback from an artificial retention pond. And yet our natural rivers that are even more ecologically valuable are given less protection.
They shouldn't be on near the riverbank, should they?
The houses? Sorry, I didn't hear.
Yeah, I would say that's not a good plan. I mean, the riverbanks can erode, they can sink, and would not be really safe.
Yeah. And the riverbank is so irregular. And so some houses are close to the river. Like it's not a nice, even, exact thing, eh? So some houses are quite close to the river. So when we ask for the distance to be increased, or when we're suggesting a larger setback, it would just be for new homes, because no one's going to ask someone to move an existing house here. But some houses are built very close to the river, and other houses have a lot of space from the water. But it's allowed to build very close to the water. That is what the minimum is. You only have to build 25 feet from the waterway for your home.
Okay. Is that a reasonable space, do you think? Reasonable distance?
Actually, it varies. And I'm going to be actually getting into that later, I think, in more detail here. But, I would also say, even to support preserving more land along the waterway, we have a Winnipeg Charter, which is a really big document over all the others. And it has a definition of sensitive land, where it describes land where development is likely to harm sensitive land, which is what the rivers are, ecologically significant land, where development is likely to harm its social integrity. But this has never been taken seriously in practice in Winnipeg, that this land will be harmed, because the city has allows development quite close to the riverbank, as you will see, or you probably noticed.
Yeah. So these are definitely things that should be changed in the zoning bylaws.
Yeah,
should be recognized.
Sure.
And I just want to give some examples of some, as you talk about riverbanks, about outside the city in Selkirk, Manitoba, there is a river and a creek, and this is where my sister and her husband live. And her husband is a wood carver and an artist, and they live near a creek, which there is a river, and then it sort of turns into, at some point, it turns into a creek. And they both enjoy and respect nature. They love watching the animals. And during the summer, people love speeding their boats and on the river and into the creek. And sadly, the otters that used to live in the creek are not coming back due to the boats in the water. and then a turtle was found injured in their yard after being hit by a boat. And there were once beavers in the creek, but people killed them because they were building dams. And there once were wood ducks that built their nests in the trees by the creek. Because they like quiet spaces, they no longer make their nests near the creek. But last year, a wood duck got stuck in a chimney in an old house on their property, on my sister and her husband's property. And her husband was able to rescue the wood duck. It somehow got stuck in the chimney. And anyway, he rescued it. And so I was just thinking about this conflict between the boaters and the animals. This is something that is another issue of human behavior and or disrespect for nature. And do you want to comment on that? Is that something that you have concerns about?
Like, we haven't had that issue here in the city, but I think it's a heartbreaking example that you're providing, and unfortunately it's not unique. And when fast or noisy boats use small rivers and creeks, the wildlife simply can't coexist if they use it in that manner. And so when boats speed through narrow waterways, the noise and the wake and the physical danger drive them away or injure them, just as your sister found. So this is the kind of situation, I guess, where that city should look at a bylaw or a regulation to fix that. Selkirk could have planning tools that allow them to designate sensitive waterways as a low wake or no motor zone. They can protect the wildlife while still allowing people to enjoy the water.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the case of Selkirk, of course, it's in the country and be probably under different jurisdiction.
Yeah.
But and there are people that really are upset by the what's happening, because apparently my sister told me that one of the people that lives in that area is quite upset by the fact that this person, that he is actually trapping the otters. I mean, this is just horrendous. And of course, but nobody reports on anybody because they don't want to offend their neighbors. It's that kind of a community.
That is unfortunate.
Anyway, that's just a situation.
I think it would be ideally that the municipality could look at planning documents, because it's a sensitive area. That's something I guess the politicians there would have to do, and put in place the speed limits and so on. And I guess it's hard to get a group together, I guess, to do that, but that's what would have to be done.
Mm-hmm. There has to be some action taken. And I guess people in a rural kind of community, they don't want to create friction between their neighbors. It's not, I think, the real issue. But there should, it would be nice if they could have a group that would get together and work towards protecting their creek and all those things and have meetings or something. Anyway, it's one of those things. So getting back to Ars Winnipeg, what types of improvement is Ars Winnipeg suggesting for the waterways?
Okay. I have some ideas. They should not be subjected to reduced green space requirements. That's one thing that's happening in the bylaw. These are kind of general statements. The setbacks from the water should be significantly larger and based on ecological science, not development pressure. The vegetation should be restored to natural vegetation, because a lot of the value in the habitat and the riverbank is the natural vegetation. They should be looked at as continuous corridors. Like, the water in the river is a continuous corridor. We have a water continuous corridor, but the shorelines are not continuous. And I guess a lot of that is because about half the city's waterways are privately owned. But as much as possible, the city should try to maintain connecting corridors. And so we need to treat our riverbanks as irreplaceable natural systems and think of them not as development space. And so that's part of it. But I want to go specifically, this is the one that we're really working on right now, is we want the bylaw amended to improve the protection of the waterway by increasing the setback from the water from 25 feet to 90 feet where possible. So 90 feet may sound like, you know, a big increase, but it is actually a minimum recognized standard across North America for protecting water quality and the habitat and the stability of the riverbank. So it's a perfectly fine question or request. As well, the city has actually already agreed to it in their planning documents. They amended their planning documents to, where possible, maintain a setback of 90 feet from the top, from the normal high water mark, on the waterways in our city. So that already exists. They just would have to approve it in the bylaws. And the small setback that we have right now is not really scientifically defensible. It doesn't provide adequate space for the functions of the river. So for purifying the water, for flood absorption, for erosion protection, it is a very small space. Like the 25 feet is about as long as an average garage. It's not enough space for that nature to survive and be a proper wildlife corridor and help us with the ecology and environment. And so in a climate-changing world, these riparian buffers are critical infrastructure. And a 30% setback provides room for flood mitigation, for helping with the urban heat island effect, the habitat connectivity, and adaptation. And these are things that the current 25-foot setback simply can't provide.
Yes. And and then would you explain the idea of the natural areas and the corridors that protect them? What do you mean by corridors?
Oh, okay. Well, I mentioned, the rivers are corridors themselves.
I guess so.
Yeah, the rivers are corridors. So that's one piece. But there are, so right now, natural areas and natural corridors, this is a key topic right now, because the city is, as I mentioned, they're working on the green space and natural corridors plan and biodiversity policy. So we'll be hearing a lot about that when this plan comes. And we hope that plan will be completed in the spring of 2027. And they will help give Winnipeg a clear ecological framework. So the corridors, the natural corridor is simply a pathway, I guess, and it should be a width that allows, you know, movement. So it allows nature to move. So we have river corridors are the best example, but we have also park corridors like Hart Trail, hydro corridors, and other habitat routes across the city. So it's not just water, it could be a path. These corridors connect patches of green space. So often along the corridor, like if you're following along the river, you'll notice there's a park somewhere. So the corridors kind of connect the parks and other green spaces. That's the ideal. And that's what is, you know, the goal, is to connect these patches of green space and make it kind of a continuous area. And these corridors are really important. They keep the system healthy because they do connect habitat. They support biodiversity. They help wildlife move safely. They allow plants to spread naturally. And so protecting the corridors and making sure they are connected is essential for a climate resilient, nature-rich city.
Mm-hmm. Do you would you like to also elaborate on your suggestions about bird-friendly design guidelines and lights out policy throughout the city?
Sure, that is a good topic right now. Winnipeg sits on a major bird flyway, I think we know, and every spring and fall, a devastating number of birds are killed when they strike windows during their migration. And we're actually in that migration right now. We're noticing different birds coming and going. And a few years ago, the city adopted a voluntary bird-friendly building guidelines based on the Canadian standard, along with a voluntary lights-out policy. So the lights-out policy is the portion where buildings would turn their lights out at night during migration, because that's another hazard, that birds crash into the lights, into the lit windows during their migration.
Are you talking about just city lights that are in, like there's always lights on the streets at night?
Oh, yes. You know, actually more of the, like this one would be, this would be the tall buildings.
Okay.
Like more the downtown buildings, because the birds are, like at night they could be flying right over our city, not even stopping. It's for the tall buildings.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then that
And I think, yeah. And for a bit, the city was actually sending out emails in the spring and fall reminding people about the lights out policy and giving a reminder. I haven't seen it so far this year, but I could have missed it. So those guidelines were actually adopted briefly to part of the bylaw plan, but later they were withdrawn after complaints that the window treatments were too onerous for developers. And so that, you may recall, created quite a response, from the birding community and many others who care about the birds. A lot of people really care about the birds. And that policy was removed. And so now, because actually the city had intended to make the policy citywide, it was in... we would like to see the bird-friendly guidelines made, not just voluntary guidelines, but for the city to actually have guidelines to meet some of the bird-friendly standards and have a light-out policy. And the city can even obtain certification to be a bird-friendly city. Nature Canada offers bird-friendly city certification. And a new local group has formed to help Winnipeg achieve this goal. And so we wish them very well and would like to support them. We would be very proud to see our city take steps needed to protect migrating birds and be a leader, because we are a bird-friendly, we are a city with birds on the flyway.
Yes, so I think that's a very good a good thing to be doing, is to make it easier for to avoid collisions with birds in windows in the night. That was just pretty horrible. Yeah. And as we're getting along here, another concern is zoning for more parks, not less parks. And so then, you know, would you explain that, and why are green spaces, a healthy environment, protection of habitat and natural corridors so important? And what are the threats we face from the loss of these green spaces?
Parks are protected through zoning. So if the green space is zoned, it is protected. And actually, that's what happened with Parkerlands. It wasn't zoned as park, and so it wasn't protected. And so there are properties around the city, just through history, not, you know, that they ended up being used as parks. There's other areas in the city that are being used as parks that aren't zoned as parks. So we would like the city to clean that up and protect, give those areas park zoning so they can be protected, because it's much harder to sell land that's parkland. It requires a two-thirds vote of council to convert parkland to something different. And so that's something that could really be helpful in the zoning review. And the other things are, as the city grows and density increases, we need more parks because families are losing their private green space that they once had in their backyards. With the very small houses, there's no place, for children to have their playground equipment or sandboxes, and then the taller buildings. So we should be having a plan right now to set aside those parklands, be future-looking. We're still waiting for the green space plan. So another item is, in its planning documents, the city has committed to acquiring 1,000 acres of new parkland. And so we would like to see that happen, because that the need was recognized that we need more green space.
Well, that's a good thing.
What's that?
So you're really encouraged. How can people access this petition or this, is it called a petition or your questionnaire about
to get more
zoning?
Okay. Okay, right now, the city has a survey open until June 5th, and it's on the city website.
Okay.
And the easy way to find it is just type in engage Winnipeg, two words, engage Winnipeg. And you can see all of the projects the city's working on right now. And so one of the projects right now is the bylaw review. And also the climate action plan is being reviewed right now. So those are two opportunities. If you fill in those surveys, you can give your opinions about acquiring more green space, about protecting the riverways, and looking at the world here with more of a green lens. So that's they're quick and easy surveys to do. So I would really encourage everyone to take a moment and to complete those surveys for the city.
That would be very, very helpful. I haven't done it yet, but I'm planning to do that for sure before. The deadline, I believe, is June the 5th for to have the survey to be filled
June
in.
June 5th. Yeah.
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 Well, I just, you know, also want to mention that last summer we were at the Assiniboine Park, and we noted that all the trees were being cut down in the park, and I was quite shocked at that, because you know at one time wildlife was protected at the park in the Assiniboine Park, but since it became a private public partnership, there was an effort to deter wildlife such as deer in the park, and you know, it was at one time actually the city used to feed the deer. They used to come across the road from the other side to enter the park. And the city used to feed them. That was a much more humane approach. Now they don't want anybody feeding anything. And I have pictures that I could show you. I have taken pictures from somebody who was interested in the wildlife and in the deer. And somebody, there's a picture of somebody putting poison down. We've got the picture. A city employee. There was a picture of a dead deer shot. Like, these are things that I don't understand that is happening. I'm not impressed with that kind of attitude and the fact that they're taking away all the trees. So, you know, there's a lot that might be going on that we don't know about, and it's unfortunate.
I don't really know about that situation.
I know.
And, you mentioned.
Most people don't.
I know the trees are being, I would say, because did you mention about the trees being cut as well? Or
yes, they were cutting down the trees. I think they don't want the deer there. That's the reason, because they're more into making money. Because there's a zoo. You have to pay to see the zoo animals. You can't even go in there. And there's also a sort of a greenhouse with all kinds of butterflies as well.
Yeah.
But I'm not impressed anymore. Okay. I'm just turned right off about that. I don't want to go there again because, I mean, they have a beautiful flower garden, but I think animals need to be protected.
Yes. I don't know about that situation, but I would say, you know, the park is on the Assiniboine River. And as we mentioned, that is a natural corridor. So I certainly hope the park is not disrupting the normal activity on the wildlife corridor because the animals have to be free to travel. Did you mention that people are feeding the deer as well?
I knew somebody that was feeding the deer. At one time, the city used to do it in the wintertime, but I knew someone that was feeding the deer. Of course, she got into some conflict with people in the...
Yeah, feeding the deer. Yeah, because feeding the deer is
so
definitely not...
with the counselor at the time. But anyway, that's another story. That was a number of years ago. But I have all the pictures.
Yeah.
It was very, you know, unfortunate.
You know, that's another reason, you know, why we need to protect our river corridors and give them more space. Because, you know, like, there's been lots of natural areas around the city that are owned by individuals, but they're not developed. So they are habitat. And as the city develops, we're losing so much green space because, you know, everything is getting developed and, you know, the houses are getting very close to the waterways. And so the animals really don't have a space to travel. So, you know, we do need more park. We do need wider setbacks along the waterways. And I think, you know, we've probably all been noticing the deer are wandering around, but I think they have nowhere to live now. They're like, they're kind of, you know, they've adapted and they're feeding in the neighborhood.
I know. We saw a deer walking down our street one day a couple of years ago. I mean, you know, they're obviously, they're displaced. And so anyway, but I thank you so much for joining us today, Pam. It was very interesting to learn about this. And I hope that people will take up the call and sign the petition, let their feelings be known, because we need to, we need those that care about animals need to speak out and care about natural habitats and corridors. We need to express our views. It'll be very helpful to the city.
Because it really is missing from the plan. When you see the survey, when you're reading it online, there's really nothing about green space. They mentioned landscaping, which would be on a property, right? It's not like protecting green space and parks and natural areas. It's just not in there. So we need everyone to sign that survey, or not sign it, but to fill it out and give their voices, have their voices heard.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Pam. Did you have a song that you'd like to recommend? Or?
Oh, I didn't do that. Okay.
Okay.
You'll have to find one for me. Okay.
Maybe, John, you might have something.
I can't really think of any songs either that go with the topic, so.
Well, okay.
We'll come up with something.
Okay.
But again, thank you, Pam, for joining us this morning. It was great talking to you, and we learned a lot.
Okay, thanks for inviting me.
Okay. Well, there's Joni Mitchell.
Yeah. This is Joni Mitchell, Big Yellow Taxi.
Okay.
Put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. Charge the people a dollar and a half just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on apples, but leave me the birds and the bees. Seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam, and a big yellow taxi took away my old man. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. I said, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
Up a parking lot.
Okay. I guess, Pam, you're not there anymore. Let's see if she's still here.
No.
Okay. I just want to, I would like to add That on a last note, I'd like to point out that Ours Winnipeg originated out of concern for the loss of green spaces and natural habitat. In December 2011, Ours Winnipeg responded to a plan by the City of Winnipeg to put 7 of the city-owned golf courses for sale or development. I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but we'll repeat it again. A public campaign was launched, which resulted in the proposal being withdrawn. So it is vital that people recognize the power of nature to heal and that we need to respect nature. And so filling this petition and letting the city know what you think. If you want natural spaces to be protected and corridors to be protected and green spaces to be protected, please do fill out the survey to provide guidance for those that create the environmental laws. Okay, so I'm just taking a quick look here as to how our time is going. I want to, on the same note again, maybe I would just share some things from an organization called Canadian Association of Physicians for the Environment, known as CAPE for short, C-A-P-E. So what they're saying, CAPE is saying, that they are witnessing the sweeping rollback of many of Canada's most important environmental policies. In the past couple of weeks alone, the federal government gutted industrial carbon pricing, weakened clean electricity regulations, and put forward bills to undermine pesticide controls. It is fast-tracking major fossil fuel infrastructure projects while weakening environmental oversight and Indigenous rights. And many provincial governments have been following suit. This is not happening because the public stopped caring. It is happening because the fossil fuel industry has successfully shifted the narrative. At Canadian Association of Physicians for the Environment, we believe this moment requires more than policy analysis and reactive opposition. We want to fundamentally change what is politically possible in Canada by making the connection between health and our environment impossible to ignore. And that is the work ahead of us. Over the next year, CAPE, that's Canadian Association for the Physicians for the Environment, is preparing to mobilize more physicians across the country as trusted public advocates, strengthen campaigns that make environmental harms visible and personal, and show up stronger than ever before in news media and social media, pushing the connection between health and the environment into national conversations. So this is what the Canadian Association of the Physicians for the Environment are saying. And of course, they're asking people for donations to help them with their projects. So there is a lot of concern out there from different directions. Here is something that is not particularly encouraging. The Liberal government has signed a memorandum of understanding with Alberta Premier Daniel Smith, which announces plans for a new Alberta to BC pipeline with construction to begin as early as next fall. Here's the kicker, though. Private investors won't step in unless the government offers up financial support, which is why we need to stop the funneling of public money into another dead-end pipeline project. Public outrage is bubbling, with 14 Liberal MPs coming out in dissent and even more working behind the scenes. We want to turn up the heat with enough public toxicity around the project, the government won't have the public license needed to get this pipeline off the ground. By funneling our hard-earned money into a climate-destroying pipeline during a cost-of-living crisis, the federal government is choosing big oil's profit margins over investing in the needs of everyday people. So, thousands in the Lead Now community, this is an organization, Lead Now, are already taking action by flooding MPs' inboxes to fuel public pressure. We need to keep up the momentum. And so this is another organization that would like donations to help them with their work, but it's also addressing these issues. So, yes, there's other ways about getting our energies. There's wind power. There's solar power. There's a number of ways that we don't have to be continuing to build pipelines. And I think I can end up with a recipe. And this is a tahini dress. This is a recipe that we had at a garden party when we were serving Buddha bowls. And the Buddha bowl is made with quinoa. You cook some quinoa and you put a dressing on it and you put different things on it. So I'm going to just say the quinoa, to cook the quinoa, which is a grain and is very healthy, you need about 2 cups of water to 1.5 cups of quinoa, but you have to rinse it as well through a strainer. And you put it in the water and you let it come to a boil for 10 minutes. It only takes 10 minutes to cook. And then you fluff it up. If there's too much moisture in it, it will soak it up. Or you can sift it through a sifter. You toss it with fork, and then you can add some cranberries or dried currants to it as well. You place the quinoa in a bowl, and then you top it with roasted yams. So we baked a whole bunch of yams, and on a tray. Sprinkling it with olive oil, maybe some salt and paprika, cubed yams. We put some cubed yams upon it, and we also had beets. We had cut up some beets, but the beets, if you want to cook them, you need to put them in a covered pot so they steam, because beets are difficult to cook that just by baking them. So you have these beets, you steam them once they're cooked. You can season them with a little bit of vinegar or lemon juice, some salt, and you add that to the quinoa dish along with some cooked chickpeas. And then you cut up some kale, raw kale, put it on top, and then you top with the tahini dressing. And this is the recipe for it. It's very simple. 1/4 cup of tahini. That's a sesame seed paste, by the way. 2-3 tablespoons of water, 2 tablespoons of lemon juice, 1 tablespoon of maple syrup, 1 teaspoon of toasted sesame seed oil, or whatever oil you have, and 1 small clove of garlic pressed, 1/4 teaspoon of sea salt. You blend all until very smooth. Add a little more water to thin it out, or to the consistency that you like. And pour it over. You pour some of the dressing over the Buddha bowl, and it's very popular. We serve that at a garden party, as well as other types of food. Thank you for listening to Wooden Spoons, and.
You've been listening to Wooden Spoons, on sponsored by Mary Jane's Cooking School on CKUW 95.9 FM. For our podcast, please go to CKUW.ca, type Wooden Spoons in the search bar, and the show will be up in just a few hours. Till next time, this is John Dick and Mary Jane Eason saying bye for now, and thanks for listening.